Let its fragrance flow. Let its fragrance flow. Sometimes the fragrance is so abundant that it seems to the soul she is clothed with delight and bathed in inestimable glory, to such an extent that the experience is not only within her, but overflows and becomes manifest outside of her. And those capable of recognizing it are aware of her experience. It seems to them that she is in a pleasant garden filled with the delights and riches of God. And not only when these flowers are open can you see this in these holy souls, but they ordinarily bear in themselves an I don't know what of greatness and dignity. This causes awe and respect in others because of the supernatural effect diffused in such persons from their close and familiar conversation with God. It is said of Moses in Exodus that others were unable to look upon his countenance because of the honor and glory that remained with him after he conversed face to face with God. Exodus 34:29-30 and 2 Corinthians 3-7. In this breathing through the soul, which is the Holy Spirit's visit of love, the Bridegroom, the Son of God, is himself sublimely communicated. He sends his Spirit as he sent his apostles, Luke 22:8, to act as his quartermaster, to prepare his dwelling, the bride soul, by raising her up in delight and adorning this garden, opening its flowers, uncovering the gifts, and decorating her with the tapestry of grace and riches. And thus the bride has immense longing that the north wind be stilled and that the south wind come and breathe through her garden. For then the soul gains many things together. She gains the agreeable exercise of the perfect virtues. She gains enjoyment of the beloved in them, since by their means he communicates himself to her with more intimate love and grants her a more particular favor than before. She obtains that her beloved delight more in her through this exercise of the virtues, and this is what she most enjoys, pleasing the beloved. And she also gains the continuation of this delight and sweetness of the virtues. This endures as long as the bridegroom thus sustains his bride and gives her sweetness in her virtues. And she says in the canticle, while the king was at his repose in the soul, my flowering spinnaker gave forth its fragrance. This fragrant spinnaker refers to the soul herself, who from the flowers of the virtues within her gives forth the scent of sweetness to her beloved, dwelling in her in this union. Hence this divine breeze of the Holy Spirit should be greatly desired. Let each soul petition that he breathe through her garden, that the divine fragrance might flow. Since this is so necessary and brings such glory and good to the soul, the bride in the canticle desired and asked for it in the same terms as here, saying, arise, north wind, come, south wind, and blow through my garden, and its fragrance and precious spices will flow. Canticles 4:16. The soul desires this, not for her own pleasure and glory, but because she knows her bridegroom delights in this, and that it is a preparation and foretelling of the coming of the Son of God, to take his delight in her, she says next, "And the beloved will feed amid the flowers." The soul applies the word feed to the delight that the Son of God takes in her at this time. This term provides an appropriate description, since food is something which is not only gives pleasure, but also sustains. The Son of God finds delight in the soul, in these her delights, and is sustained in her, that is, he dwells in her as in a place that pleases him, for the soul is indeed pleasing to him. This, I believe, is what he meant through what Solomon said in Proverbs, "My delights are with the sons of men," Proverbs 8:31. That is, when their delight is to be with me, who am the Son of God. It should be noted that the soul does not say the beloved will feed on the flowers, but amid the flowers, since the bridegroom communicates himself to the soul by means of the adornment of these virtues. He feeds on the soul, transforming her into himself, now that she is prepared and seasoned with the flowers of virtues, gifts and perfections, the seasonings with which and among which he feeds on her. By means of the Holy Spirit, who prepares the dwelling, these virtues delight the Son of God, so that through them he may feed more on the love of the soul. This is characteristic of the bridegroom, to unite himself with the soul amid the fragrance of these flowers. The bride of the canticle, as one who knows so well, notes this characteristic in these words, "My beloved is gone down into the garden, to the small threshing floor, and the air scented with the aromatic spices, to pasture in the gardens and gather lilies." And again she says, "I for my beloved, and my beloved for me, who feeds among the lilies." Canticle 6:2. That is, who feeds and delights in my soul, which is his garden amid the lilies of my virtues, perfections and graces. Stanza 18, Introduction. Since in this state of spiritual espousal the soul is able to see her excellent qualities and ample riches, and also that she does not possess and enjoy them as she would like, because she still dwells in the body, her suffering is often intense, especially so when her awareness of this lack is heightened. Her presence in the body makes her feel like a noble lord held in prison. Such a prisoner is subject to 1,000 miseries, while his dominions are confiscated, and he is prevented from making use of his lordship and wealth. All he gets from his riches is a little food, and that very sparingly. The extent of his suffering is obvious, for even the members of his own household are not submissive to him. His servants and slaves, without any respect, turn against him every chance they have, even to the point of taking from his plate the morsel of food meant for him. For at the moment God favors the soul with the taste of a morsel of the goods and riches he has prepared for her, a bad servant or appetite, sometimes an inordinate movement, sometimes other sensory rebellions, rise up in the lower part and impede this good. As a result, the soul feels as though she were in the land of enemies and tyrannized among strangers, and like one dead among the dead. She has a definite experience of what the prophet Baruch discloses in stressing the misery of Jacob's captivity. How is it, Israel, that you are in enemy land? You have grown old in foreign land. You are defiled with the dead. You are counted with those who go down into hell. Baruch 3:10-11. As Jeremiah, feeling this miserable treatment, the soul suffers because of its captivity in the body, speaks of a spiritual sense to Israel. Is Israel perhaps a servant or a slave? Why is he thus imprisoned? The lions have roared upon him. Jeremiah 2:14-15. By the lions he refers here to the appetites and rebellions of this tyrant king, sensuality. To manifest the trouble she receives and her desire that this kingdom of sensuality, with all its armies and disturbances, come to an end or be entirely subjected to her, she raises her eyes to the bridegroom as to one who will accomplish all of this, and speaks against these movements and rebellions. You girls of Judah, while among flowers and roses, the amber spreads its perfume, stay away there on the outskirts. Do not so much as seek to touch our threshold. Commentary. It is the bride who speaks in this stanza, aware in her spiritual part of rich and beneficial gifts and delights from her beloved. She desires to preserve the security and possession found in them. She referred to these gifts and delights, of which the bridegroom makes her conscience, of the two preceding stanzas, realizing that because of the lower sensory part, this good can be disturbed, and in fact is. She begs the operations and the movements of the lower faculties and senses to be still and not to transcend the limits of this sensory region, to molest and disquiet the higher and spiritual part. She asks this so that the good and delight enjoyed will not be impeded by even the slightest motion in this lower part. When the spirit is rejoicing, the movements of the senses and its faculties, in the measure that they are active and lively, molest and disquieted, she says then, "You girls of Judah." The lower sensory part of the soul is Judea, because it is weak and carnal, and of itself blind like the Judean people. She names the imaginations, fantasies, movements, and affections of the lower part girls. She calls them all girls, because as girls attract lovers to themselves by their affection and grace, so these pleasant sensory operations and movements strive persistently to attract the will of the rational part to themselves. They try to draw it out of its interior to a desire for the exterior things which they crave. They also endeavor to move and attract the intellect, that it may be wed to them in their base way of feeling. And they strive to bring the rational part into conformity and union with the sensory. You then, O sensory operations and movements, she says, while among flowers and roses. The flowers, as we said, are the soul's virtues. The rose bushes are the faculties, the memory, the intellect, and the will, which bear and nurture in themselves the flowers of divine concepts, acts of love, and these same virtues. While then, among these virtues and faculties of my soul, the amber spreads its perfume. By the amber, she refers to the bridegroom's divine spirit abiding within her. The divine amber spreading its perfume among the flowers and rose bushes is a reference to the overflow and communication of the spirit in the faculties and the virtues of the soul, by which he imparts through them the perfume of divine sweetness. While the divine spirit is giving my soul this sweetness, stay away there on the outskirts. The outskirts of Judea, and Judea, we said, refers to the lower or the sensory part of the soul, are the interior senses, the memory, fantasy, and imagination, in which the forms, images, and phantasms of the objects gather and reside. By means of these images, the sensory appetites are moved. These forms are what she refers to as girls. When they are quiet and tranquil, the appetites are also asleep. These images enter the outskirts and the interior senses through the gates of the exterior senses, hearing, sight, smell. They do so in such a way that we can call both the interior and exterior sense faculties outskirts, for they are the districts outside the walls of the city. That part of the soul called the city is the innermost part, the rational portion, which is capable of communion with God. Its operations are contrary to those of the sensory part. Yet because there is a natural communication between the people, or girls, dwelling in these outskirts of the sensory part with the superior part of the city, this communication is of such a kind that what occurs in this lower part is usually felt in the interior part, and consequently distracts and deprives it of the peace it has from its spiritual activity and attentiveness to God. As a result, she tells those dwelling in the outskirts, in the interior and exterior senses, to remain quiet. Do not so much as seek to touch our thresholds. This means that they should not even touch the superior part through the first movements. The first movements are the entrances and the thresholds of the soul. When these girls pass beyond first movements to the rational part of the soul, they cross the threshold. But in the case of the first movements, it is said they merely set foot on the thresholds or knock at the door. This happens when the sensory part attacks the rational for the sake of some inordinate act. The soul not only tells these girls not to enter, but also tells them not to distract the quietude and the good she enjoys. Stanza 19, Introduction. The soul in this state becomes such an enemy of the lower part and its operations that she does not want God to communicate to it any of the spiritual good he gives to the higher part. For on account of its weak condition, The sensory part is unable to endure an abundant spiritual communication without fainting. Consequently, the spirit suffers and is afflicted and cannot enjoy this communication peacefully. As the wise man says, the body, on account of its corruption, is a burden to the soul. Wisdom 9:15. Since the soul desires the highest and most excellent communications from God, and is unable to receive them in the company of the sensory part, she desires God to bestow them apart from it. St. Paul states of his sublime vision of the third heaven, in which he saw God, that he does not know whether he received it in the body or out of the body. 2 Corinthians 12:2. Nevertheless, no matter how it did take place, it occurred outside the body. For if the body had participated, St. Paul would have known of this, and the vision would not have been so sublime, as he implied by stating that he heard such secret words that it is unlawful for man to speak of them. 2 Corinthians 12:4. Knowing full well that such favors are unreceivable in so fragile a vessel, and desiring that the bridegroom grant them outside of her, or at least without her, the soul asks him in this stanza. Sorry. Hide yourself, my love. Turn your face toward the mountains, and do not speak, but look at those companions going with her through strange islands. Commentary. The bride soul asks the bridegroom four things in this stanza. First, that he be pleased to communicate himself to her very inwardly in the hiding place of the soul. Second, that he inform and shine upon her faculties with the glory and the excellence of his divinity. Third, that this communication be so sublime and profound that she may neither desire nor know how to give a description of it, and that the sensory and exterior part be incapable of receiving it. Fourth, that he be enamored of the many virtues and graces that he has placed in her. These accompany her in her ascent to God through a very lofty and elevated knowledge of the divinity, and through excesses of love which are very strange and extraordinary in comparison with those she ordinarily has. Thus she says, hide yourself, my love. This is like saying, my dear spouse, withdraw to the innermost part of my soul and communicate yourself in secret. Manifest your hidden wonders, alien to every mortal eye. Turn your face toward the mountains. The face of God is the divinity, and the mountains are the soul's faculties, the memory, intellect, and will. This verse is like saying, let your divinity shine on my intellect by giving it divine knowledge, and on my will by imparting to it the divine love, and on my memory with the divine possession of glory.